Hey, Cam.
Yes, Alex.
Weird question, and you may not even want to elaborate,
Oh boy.
but have you ever been fired from a job?
Oh, no. Well, no, I have not. Luckily, knock on wood, I have not ever been fired from a job. I've left a couple, of course, on not great terms of thinking I needed to do better for myself. But no, fortunately, I have never been fired.
Oh, well, I only got fired once, and I don't know if I ever told you, but I was a teller at a bank locally. I don't even understand what happened, really. This older lady came in and she came up to the counter and she asked me to check her balance for her. So I pushed her over.
That's like a senior on senior crime, Alex.
Chopper out to Dansby. Dansby throws to first base. Is this happening? It is. The Atlanta Braves are world champions.
Welcome to the Chatting Average Podcast.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
Let me talk to you.
Welcome to your friendly neighborhood Atlanta Braves podcast. Welcome to Chatting Average. I'm your host, Alex, joined as always by Mr. Cam Matthews. Cam, how you doing?
What? Shaking bacon.
Oh, not too much, not too much. Thank you all for joining us here on the Fans First Sports Network. It is a thrill to be back with you. Sorry we missed the last couple of weeks, but we are back and better than ever. Cam, how's it been going?
Pretty great. I ate a payday before we came on air tonight, and that was great. So,
And let me just get in on this, because I don't know if you've been listening to us for a long time. You may think I'm going the direction of our old, ice cream cake versus cookie cake thing, but no. Payday is an elite candy bar.
Yes, sir.
One of the very best candy bars, in fact. And I want to let it be known that that Dylan Short of 680 The Fan, the Braves radio network, has no idea what he's talking about. No taste. And I don't understand how 680 puts up with that. Anyway, Cam.
Do you think he's listening to this?
I hope so, but I doubt it.
I hope so. Like if he just like blanket copies you and me in a tweet tomorrow calling us out, that would make my day. But also
someone's gonna hear it and tell him you gotta listen to this episode.
Probably.
Tasteless. You're
he's
tasteless,
too big time
Dylan.
For us now.
He is. He's on the official network.
Ooh.
But hey, we know a guy on the official network, so that's cool.
We know a few guys on official networks.
We do. We
by
do.
By golly.
I don't know how this podcast has led to us interacting with and knowing the people we have, but it's pretty cool.
Hey, is there a buzzing in the background?
It seems my wife is opening the garage door and my podcast room is right above the garage.
Ah, that's what that noise is.
Ah, yes.
Tremendous, tremendous content. Anyway.
Where is she going? More as the story unfolds.
Stay tuned. Okay. All right. Let's act like we're doing this.
We're closing the garage door behind us.
Okay. She's gonna listen to this tomorrow.
Yes, she is. Oh, I can't wait.
Pissed that we're talking about it.
I'm gonna get a text right after she hears this. Anyway,
anywho,
it has been a little while since we've spoken, and it has been a thoroughly entertaining Major League Baseball season so far. And there is actually plenty to discuss that doesn't involve the Braves. Cam, where do you feel like getting started?
I'll tell you what. Today is May or April 30th as we record this show, and so that means tomorrow, I'm not going to make the joke. You already know the joke. Anyway, tomorrow's May 1st, right?
It's going to be May.
Jesus Christ. Anywho, I thought it'd be cool to kind of look up and down the current standings as we head into the second official month of the season to kind of see where everybody stands. And there are lots of surprises.
There are. Can we talk about the American League East first, please?
Absolutely. So the American League East, of course, you got the Tampa Bay Rays sitting at the top at 23-6. They're followed up by the Orioles at 19-9, the Blue Jays 18-10, Boston 15-14, and New York at 15-14. So where do you want to start there?
And if you told me that 29, nearly 30 games into the season, the Yankees and Red Sox would be tied for last place in the division, I would have called you crazy. It's mind-boggling.
Well, and it's not just the fact that the Yankees are currently tied for last place in the AL East. It's the fact that they have a run differential of +2 at the moment and are currently 3-7 in their last 10 and drop the series to the Texas Rangers this weekend.
Every team in the American League East has a positive run differential, varying from +2 for the Yankees up to +103 for the Tampa Bay Rays.
All right, so here's a fun little topic of discussion. We'll kind of jump over to the West briefly for a moment. Which number is going to be the more extreme at the end of the season? The positive run differential for the Tampa Bay Rays or the negative run differential for the Oakland Athletics?
Oh, my.
Oakland currently sitting at -117.
And speaking of Oakland, we haven't even been on the air since it got announced that they were going to be going to Las Vegas.
I hate it so much.
God.
okay. Let's go to the standings and we'll jump into some other things.
Okay. So the Red Sox are good. I'm confused.
The Red Sox are a team.
They're above 500.
So are some other teams that probably shouldn't be.
And they're not in last place.
I
honestly believed, and if you listen to my preseason predictions episode, I went in hard on the Red Sox. I was convinced they were going wire to wire last place.
Well, they're still time for them to drop. and then, Toronto currently sitting in third place. They had a bit of a slow start, but they're finding themselves. I think they're going to be fine. Baltimore, meanwhile, 19-9, 10 games over 500, only 3.5 back, 8-2 in their last 10. Talk about a team that is just kind of finding it despite everything else going against them.
Well, they're starting to put together a lineup. They really have a lineup and a defense that can compete with just about anybody. It's still the problem is that they don't have pitching. They just have nothing.
Or money.
More money.
They don't have money either. And then, of course, Tampa Bay is still sitting on top after their ridiculous start to the season. 14-2 at home.
And, I mean, they've fallen off a bit to 23-6.
Oh, heavens me.
With a +103 run differential in 29 games.
Has their home run streak ended?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Because they had a home run, I think, through the first 23-ish games, which is just ridiculous.
That's another team with one hell of a lineup. Like, there aren't a ton of...
Beyond all reason.
Exactly. But the Rays have been doing this for years, haven't they?
Like, they have.
They just trot out there a team of guys that we don't know, and they keep winning games.
Their analytics are beyond our comprehension.
It is. It's amazing.
All right, sliding over to the AL Central, you got Minnesota in first place at 17-12, followed up by Cleveland at 13-15, Detroit in third place at 10-17, Chicago 8-21, and Kansas City 7-22. Going to go ahead and reiterate that. The Chicago White Sox in the year of our Lord 2023 are 8-21 to begin the season. They are 1-9 in their last 10.
Is it time to talk White Sox? Are we talking White Sox?
Let's talk White Sox. They're not good.
They're not good, guys. They're really not good. And it doesn't make a ton of sense. You've got a pretty good rotation led by Dylan Cease with Lance Lynn and Lucas Giolito. You've got some good relief pitchers. You've got Liam Hendricks, who presumably will be back after beating cancer. Yasmani Grandal, Yoan Moncada, Tim Anderson. Why are they bad? Why?
Yeah, it's...
I will give you two names to explain why they're bad. The names are Jerry Reinsdorf and Tony La Russa. And the combination of those two men has absolutely destroyed this franchise to the point where I just don't understand how they have fans anymore. I didn't know this until today, actually, Cam, but with about 2 days' notice, White Sox ownership canceled FanFest this year.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's no fun.
After an offseason where you are expected to make moves to compete and really all you do is go out and get Mike Clevinger.
Yeah. Who is also not good.
Not good in person or on the field.
I saw a Twitter reply this week that said Mike Clevinger is an awful person and somehow a worse baseball player.
It's mind-boggling, but somehow he pulls it off.
You know, just looking at some of their offensive stats, like the White Sox range in the bottom third of the league in numerous categories, like runs scored, batting average, OPS, home runs. Like, they can't hit. They're not producing. And then, of course, pitching, not great either.
And then you got Luis Robert.
Like, they currently have the second worst total team ERA in the league at 5.96. The only team that is worse in terms of ERA in baseball are the Oakland Athletics at 7.72.
Do you know how tightly I was hanging on to my Luis Robert Jr. rookie cards when I would get them? Like, this guy was a shoe-in MVP caliber player. And he's hitting .213 this year. The video came out from the other day of him hitting a chopper in the infield that he absolutely could have gotten a single on.
Oh yeah, that was
and he
good.
Just dogged it all the way down to first and got thrown out on a lob throw from the pitcher. Like, there is something fundamentally wrong with this organization.
I think I know who was to blame, Alex.
Who's that?
I think you know.
Tony La Russa.
Yeah, there we go. We don't blame anybody. We'll just blame Tony.
I mean, you bring in a Hall of Fame baseball guy and you don't expect things to go this way.
So what exactly are the Detroit Tigers?
I thought they were going to make a leap this year. I really did.
It's not happening.
I like a lot of their young pieces. I really do. But yeah, it does not seem to be happening.
Well, I think a lot of that, like, fool's gold or, you know, false hope comes from last season where they went on a little bit of a spending spree, right? And they got Javi Baez. And then, you know, everybody suddenly remembered that Javi Baez is also a not good player anymore. I don't know. The AL Central is dookie. Minnesota is the only team with a positive run differential.
I mean, it'll probably help in 2026 when they're no longer paying Miguel Cabrera $30+ million a year.
Probably.
Because his options for 24 and 25 have both vested at $30 million.
Well, and
those are his age 41 and 42 seasons.
Well, and it also doesn't help that he is just downright unplayable at this point in his career.
He is. I mean, you can't blame the guy. He's over 40 and he's been in the league for almost 20 years. Like, he's going to fall off. It's just how it happens.
I tell you, he got his 3,000th hit a little over a year ago at this point.
I was really hoping he was going to ride off into the sunset after that.
That should have been it. He should have just hung it up right then.
But yeah, I mean, at the same time, I can't blame him. Like, the team's, if someone's paying me $30 million to suck, I will come suck for $30 million.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Heading out to the AL West. Texas Rangers in first place at 17-11, followed up by Houston at 14-13. The LA Angels are currently sitting at 15-14. Seattle, meanwhile, fourth place at 12-16. And your Oakland Athletics, 6-23. 6-23.
It's so bad. It's so, so bad. They just snapped a 9-game losing streak today.
We are on the precipice of, oh boy, we are on the forefront of a historically bad season.
Well, and I'm trying to understand, even from a sleazy perspective, like what the end game is for ownership of the Athletics. Like they're going to move to Las Vegas. What the hell are they going to take with them?
They're currently on pace to win 33.5 games this year.
Like it's they may not even
may not even eclipse 40 wins this season, Alex.
I mean, they're 3-12 at home and they're 3-11 away, so at least you can say they're balanced.
Yeah, I guess. That's one way to look at it. I don't know, and there are so many things about the Oakland franchise that just bother me greatly. Ownership being at the forefront.
And I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they were going to the playoffs and like they won the division in 2013. And all of a sudden the last decade, they haven't made a single wise move aside from sending the Braves their best players.
So I tweeted this out a couple of weeks ago when there was some big momentum in how bad Houston or how bad Oakland was doing. And there was a night a couple of weeks ago where I think something like 12 of the 13 AAA games played the night before outdrew the Oakland Athletics game on that same night.
I believe it.
So in 2019, the last time that Oakland theoretically fielded a competitive playoff team, their average attendance every night was 24,068 people. So, you know, just a little over 24,000 people. Last season, three seasons later in 2022, the Athletics go 60-102 and just average under 10,000 people. In three seasons, their average attendance was cut in more than half.
Good God. What's their attendance like this year? Do we know
that? I don't know.
Oh God. I mean, there have been some games where they'll show the highlights and there's like a couple of people in the stands.
And you know, it's really frustrating that this team is moving. Now, look, I have zero ties to Oakland whatsoever. I'm not an Oakland fan by any means. I know literally one Athletics fan in my life, and he is absolutely heartbroken over this. But you're talking about a team that within the city of Oakland has some tremendous history, right? Like, you're talking about the 60s and 70s A's that saw guys like Catfish Hunter and Raleigh Fingers and Reggie Jackson, for God's sake, get their start in the league. You're talking about one of the most eccentric owners that we've ever seen, Charlie Finley, battle with and for his players, creating all sorts of tremendous stories. You're talking about a team that won three World Series in a row. Three! Not that long ago, like less than 50 years ago at this point, which in the grand scheme of baseball history is not that long ago. You're talking about a blue-collar town that for a good while lived and breathed the green and gold, but because the local city government and ownership could not work things out and completely fumbled the idea of investing in something within the community is why the team is leaving. And you know, the idea that the fans are to blame is just infuriating.
Absolutely not. Under no circumstances. And yes, I'll go further on your comment about Oakland being kind of the working class town. It's California's version of like a Detroit or a Cleveland or a Pittsburgh. Yeah. And you know what those three places have in common? They are unbelievable sports cities. Now, look, none of them are going to be high up on my list of places that I got to go visit because they are working class towns. They are what they are. But the people that live there and the teams that are there, the connection is different. And I believe that for a time that connection existed in Oakland. And it's really sad to see that it doesn't anymore.
Absolutely is. And, you know, just beyond the athletics, consider that the city of Oakland within, the past decade have let three different franchises move out.
It's wild. I don't get it.
All right, so we'll go ahead and jump over to the National League East, where your Atlanta Braves currently sit in first place at 18-9 on the year. New York in second place at 15-12. Miami at 16-13. Philadelphia currently sitting at 15-13 as they play the Sunday night game against Houston, and Washington bringing up the rear at 10-17.
Is there a single surprise on that list to you, Cam?
Washington's doing a little bit better than I thought they would. 10-17 doesn't feel like god awful last place team, you know, especially when you talk about how the American League last place teams are currently doing. But no, sure. I don't think there's really any real surprise. I mean, Miami's doing pretty decent. 16-13 at this point, you know, three games above 500, not too shabby.
Yeah.
The run differential is awful though.
It was kind of glossed over a little bit, I think, mainly because I disregard the Marlins in most conversations. But they did bring in the reigning American League batting champion to anchor their lineup, and he's been doing a phenomenal job. Luis Arraez was an incredible pickup for them.
Yeah, yeah. Who was he traded for again?
Oh God.
Pablo Lopez. That's right. That's right. And then, they picked up Gene Segura to anchor third base for them.
Which, yep. And cause fits for the Braves, which he always tends to do.
Of course. But no, I mean, I don't think there's any real surprise at this point. You know, Braves, of course, have the best run differential in the division at plus 43. A home record could be a little bit better. Gosh, we are 7-7 at home right now.
That's tough. That's a tough look, especially when that hasn't been the case for the last few years.
Yeah, 11-2 on the road, though, is not too bad. But no, I mean, AL East, or NL East, rather, playing out kind of how we thought it would to this point.
Yeah, just like the Central, right?
Yeah, so let's get into that. The NL Central currently being led by the Buccos, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
Raise the Jolly Roger! Raise it! They're followed up by the Milwaukee Brewers at 18-10. Chicago in third place at 14-13. They got swept by Miami this weekend. Cincinnati in fourth place at 12-16. And then the St. Louis Cardinals in last place at 10-19.
The only thing we knew about the NL Central going into this season was that they weren't that great and it was going to be chaotic. Now the quality of play, especially from the top two teams, I think has surprised just about everybody, but the chaos is pretty much on par with what we expected.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at this point, if you're a Cardinals fan, you're hitting the panic button, right?
You have to.
Yeah, you have to be. And then if you're a Pirates fan, you are savoring every single moment of the And let me say this too about the Pirates. Like, these aren't lucky wins, right?
No.
Like, this isn't a team that is just scraping by. They're currently fourth in runs scored. In terms of batting average, they are fifth in the league. In OBP, they are third. In slugging, they are second. I mean, this is a team that is hitting the ball extremely well. And then in terms of pitching, Let's see, where do they rank? They are seventh in the league at with an ER team ERA at 3.55. How many home runs have they allowed? They're a little further down the list.
Yeah, Cam, I do have one question, and I promise it'll be the last time I ask you.
Yes.
What time is it?
All right. Do I really have to answer this?
He signed an extension. It's the last time.
Okay, fine. It is 8:45 p.m. on March 30th, 2023, and Brian Reynolds is still not a Brave.
And unfortunately, that's going to be the way it stays, because the Pirates inked Brian Reynolds to the largest contract in Pittsburgh history, over $100 million to extend their star left fielder.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know what? Good for them. Good for the city of Pittsburgh. I would have loved to see Brian Reynolds wearing a Braves uniform, but you know, that team needed something to go their way.
Oh, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm extremely happy for the guy. I'm happy to see Andrew McCutchen's resurgence this year.
Andrew McCutchen's already got 5 bombs this year.
Yeah. Like, dude,
what year are we in?
Yeah. All right, so I have a hypothetical for you.
Yeah.
The St. Louis car, is that the garage door again?
Oh yeah, she just got home.
Oh cool. Okay, good. Cool, good. Tell her I said hi. If the Cardinals continue on the clip that they are currently on, do you fire Ollie Marmol at the end of the season if he makes it to the end of the season?
If it were me, I would have fired Ollie Marmol about 2 weeks into the season.
Yeah. Well, yeah. after the Tyler O'Neill fiasco.
Exactly. Yeah, that would have been it.
Yeah, that is still the most like interesting hire I've ever seen. The guy's 36 years old, and you're just like, all right, here you go. Here's the keys to the franchise. Have fun.
I mean, he's not TLR, and he's not Mike Matheny, so I guess that's a win.
Yeah.
But that's
he's also not baby arm Mike Schilt either.
I forgot about the baby arms.
He has baby arms. I don't know how else to describe it.
It's crazy.
The man's arms are tiny, okay?
But before we get done with the Central, I just want to – I'm looking at the 7 qualified batters, the 7 batters who would qualify for a batting title if the season ended today for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I'm going to read you these 7 names and tell me if that sounds like a team that's won 20 games already to you. Key Brian Hayes, Brian Reynolds, Rodolfo Castro, Ji-Won Bae, Carlos Santana, Connor Joe, Jack Sawinski.
Yes, yes, and no to the rest.
Right. Like, Carlos Santana was washed up years ago, and all of a sudden he's playing well.
Right. Oh, man, what a team. Like, and they're a fun team to watch, too.
They got a dude named Connor Joe.
You don't remember Connor Joe? Played with the Rockies last year.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he did. And what a head of lettuce that
Where did he come
has,
from? Too. Where did he go?
Where did you come from, old Connor Joe? All right. We'll head out now to the National League West, where, to no surprise to anyone, and I'm being facetious, the Arizona Diamondbacks are currently in first place of the West at 16-13, tied for first with the Dodgers at 16-13. Likewise, the San Diego Padres currently sit in third place at 15-14, one game back. The Giants at 11-16, and the Colorado Rockies at 9-20.
I know it's only a 3-game difference between the Padres and Giants, but man, that feels like just eons between them.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I would also say that the Padres being one game back of the Diamondbacks and Dodgers feels like more than one game, because the Padres just don't feel like a team that can get things clicking.
Well, here's my thing with the Padres. They're 15-14. They're one game back of first place. They've kind of played like crap this year. Go look at Juan Soto's numbers. He has been non-existent this season. Mm-hmm. Manny Machado.
More like non-Soto, am I right?
Juan Soto, no. but the fact that they're playing as poorly as they have been, and they're still staying above 500 and within reach of the top of the division, tells me that like they're probably going to hit their stride at some point this season. And right. When they do with that lineup, it's going to be scary. So even though they're not off to as hot of a start as like the Braves or the Pirates, I have no fear for San Diego at this point in the season.
Here's a question for you. Are the Dodgers actually good this season?
I have no idea.
That team feels like such a mystery. Like, you're talking about a team that really got zero upgrades, it feels like, in the offseason. And so I don't know if they're just standing pat until they go for Ohtani this upcoming offseason or what.
I mean, I'm looking at their competition. They swept the Rockies in a short series. They won a series against the Cubs. They swept the Cardinals. I don't think the Dodgers are good because, like, they played the Mets. They lost the series to the Mets. They lost the series convincingly to the Pirates. I'm still not sold on this Dodgers team.
Yeah, I'm not either. They're interesting. I'll be interested to see what they do in the coming month, and we'll be sure to do this.
I will say Max Muncy already having 11 home runs is pretty wacky, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. For a guy who I feel like I saw a lot of Dodgers fans talking crap about the first like week or so of the season.
Yeah.
And then I don't know.
Before we get done with the NL West, want to talk about the two-game set that the Padres and Giants just played, the Mexico City series. So these guys go down and play in Mexico City, and it's the very first time that Major League Baseball has put on a regular season game in Mexico City. They've been in Mexico before, but it was always in Monterrey, which is a much lower elevation. The stadium that they were playing at in Mexico City is 41% higher in elevation than Coors Field.
That ball was flying, Daddy.
And boy, did those games show that. These two teams in two games scored a total of 37 runs. The first game of the series, Padres won 16-11. There were 11 total home runs hit in that game. The ball was absolutely flying. And it was a really entertaining series to watch. Although at the same time, I understand why you can't realistically put a team in Mexico City just due to that elevation.
Oh yeah, a team would basically have a cheat code there for 81 games out of the season.
Well, and the thing is, at that elevation, even more so than Coors Field, your pitches, like for a pitcher, the pitches aren't going to do what they want them to do. They're not going to break the way they want them to break.
Right.
The air's just thinner. There's not as much friction in the air for the balls to move. So,
right.
I mean, that it would be, I think it would be horrible for a lot of pitchers of baseball because they'd go down there and just, if they're having a great season, lose their stuff.
No, yeah, that's completely fair. Completely fair.
But once a season, a two-game exhibition, or not exhibition, but a little two-game set in Mexico City, that's going to be fun to watch every year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's always fun to see them go international like that.
All right, Cam. Well, that wraps up our look at the standings around baseball. What do you say we take a look at some cool moments from this week in baseball history?
Let's do it. All right, we are going to jump into this week in baseball history. As always, you can find these facts at nationalpastime.com. And the week we're going to be looking at is May 1st through the 7th. Our first fact comes to us from May 1st, 1991. Rangers right-hander Nolan Ryan pitches the seventh no-hitter of his career. The seventh no-hitter of his career when he defeats the Blue Jays at Arlington Stadium 3-0. The 44-year-old Texan fireballer who strikes out 16 batters becomes the oldest major leaguer ever to throw a no-hit game.
I have such a hard time with Nolan Ryan because I want to call him the best pitcher of all time, but that would mean I'd have to take Bob Gibson off that mantle, and I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah, Nolan Ryan was just nothing short of amazing. Like, you know, as much as, and you know, obviously he's still around, you know, he's still involved in the game. You still see him at games from time to time. Like, he still does public speaking engagements. There was a great documentary that came out last year that I think is on Netflix now, maybe, called Facing Nolan. Tremendous documentary.
Yes, that was an incredible doc.
Yeah, check it out if you haven't seen it. Great stuff. But this is a guy that, you know, 15, 20 years from now, when he's no longer with us, the generation after us are going to look at somebody like Nolan Ryan, like, you know, other baseball fans might look at somebody like a Babe Ruth, in the sense that he is, his stats and his story feel more like a legend or a myth.
Yes.
Than somebody who actually lived and did these things.
You know what they feel like? They feel like, do you remember, God, you're going to have to help me with the name if you remember it, but Sports Illustrated, back in the day when everybody was reading Sports Illustrated, they ran an April Fool's article about this pitcher.
Yes, it was somebody a Mets scout had found somebody that throws 140 miles an hour. And
he wore like one shoe or something like that. But it was this,
yeah,
it was this whole crazy story that just kept getting more unbelievable and more unbelievable. And once he's passed, like, that's what Nolan Ryan stories are going to sound like.
They are. They absolutely are. You're talking about a guy that pitched into his mid-40s who avoided injury through his entire career until the moment he retired. He literally retired because his elbow finally went pop at the end of his career. And then that was it. There's just seven no hitters. How many Cy Youngs?
Oof. None.
None. Not a single one.
Unbelievable.
Of all the unbelievable stats about Nolan Ryan, that might be the most unbelievable one. Good guy, Nolan Ryan. All right. Our next fact comes to us from May 3rd, 1963. Buster Narum goes deep off of Cleveland southpaw Don Mossy in his only at-bat with the Orioles. Baltimore will then option the 22-year-old rookie hurler to AAA Rochester in 6 days, making the right-hander the first pitcher to have more homers than wins in a season.
What a statistic. That's unbelievable.
Great, great little piece of bar trivia. And I tell you what, I haven't gone back to look and see, you know, what kind of career, but Don Mossy or I'm sorry, Buster Narum had after that. But part of me kind of wants to think that that is just his story that he just took with him throughout the rest of his life. You know, that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's his, I threw a football over them there mountains one time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. All right. Buster Narum. Okay. Da-da-da-da. Okay, maybe Buster should have stopped there at that game.
Didn't go well for him.
Didn't go great. He finishes his career negative 0.7 WAR, 14-27 all-time record with a 4.45 ERA.
Yikes.
Poor Buster. Anyway, our next fact comes to us from May 5th, 1913. American League president Ban Johnson suspends George Stovall indefinitely due to the Browns manager spitting tobacco juice into Charlie Ferguson's face after being ejected by the umpire 2 days ago in the team's 11-8 loss to the Naps at Sportsman Park. The banishment will last only 17 days, ending on the condition the controversial skipper sends the arbiter a letter of apology. Back when men were men in 1913, and
you just treated them like children.
And you just spit in his eye.
You have to send a letter saying you're sorry.
I would love to see the letter. Like that's got to be out there, right?
Just my bad.
No, it's not out there.
Oh, bummer.
Bummer. Anyway, all right. How dare they not save a letter that 110 years later would be read on the Chatting Average podcast?
Were the nerve.
Actually around. The nerve! If Stovall was here, I'd spit in his eye. All right, our final fact comes to us from May 7th, 2003. The police apprehend a man wanted on drug and parole violations at the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. The 24-year-old Westwood man's freedom ends when his parole officer sees him kissing his girlfriend on the stadium scoreboard during the kiss cam. Well, I guess if you're going to be dumb, you better be smart about it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Lord.
You know what's crazy?
Here's what I want to know that you'll definitely not be able to tell me. Did she stay with him after he got out?
Well, let me ask you this, Alex.
Do you blame him or her?
I'll tell you this. You know they had to have gone to that game, and in the back of his mind, he's like, I'm going to a Reds game. There's going to be thousands of people there. There's no way anybody's going to recognize
me. As long as I don't get on that kiss cam, we're going to be good.
Oh man, 2003. I wonder, were the 2003 Reds even worth seeing? Let's see. The 2003 Cincinnati Reds finished 69-93.
Oof. Was that pre or post Ken Griffey Jr.?
That has to be right during. Yeah, that's during Ken Griffey Jr.
Okay. So, yeah, people were coming out to see him, even if they were bad.
Yeah. Other outfielders on that team included Ryan Friel and Adam Dunn.
Adam Dunn.
Adam Dunn. Nicknamed Big Donkey. According to his Wikipedia page.
And anyone who ever watched him play knows why.
Dunn batted left-handed and threw right-handed. He is 6'6", weighed 285.
He's a big donkey.
He is tied for the most opening day home runs at 8 with Frank Robinson and Ken Griffey Jr.
I lived in Chicago when he was playing for the White Sox. He was a big donkey.
He finished his career with a 237 batting average and 462 home runs.
Dude could hit some bombs. I would not have put him at 462. That's a lot, but yeah, he could hit the ball a mile.
He was a one trick donkey, so to speak.
He was.
Well, from the big donkey to the jackass getting arrested on the kiss cam, that has been this week in baseball history. Do with that useless knowledge.
Cam, that was God. That was an incredible segue.
Do with that useless knowledge what you will.
If there's a segue of the year award, I think you deserve it. Anyway, let's take a look at the last couple of weeks for the Braves and see what lies ahead.
Lost the show.
Posted April 14th. Jesus Christ.
We're going to call this episode Kiss Cam? Yeah. No, wait, no.
But only if it's a picture of you. It has to be a picture of you.
Never mind, change that. We're not doing it.
It's so good. Come on.
Kiss Cam.
When we last talked, we were in the middle of the Cincinnati Red Series in the homestand. And that series went as you would expect a series with the Cincinnati Reds to go. The Braves swept them, won 3 one-run games in a row against them. So Cincinnati definitely came to play, but Braves took care of business and got out of there with 3 wins and headed from there to Kansas City.
Kansas City, here I come.
For a 3-game set. First game was on Friday the 14th. beat Kansas City 10-3. Charlie Morton gets his second win of the season. Brady Singer has a bad night for the Kansas City Royals. Saturday, we come back. Braves win 9-3. Bryce Elder shuts the door on him, goes 2-0 on the season. Meanwhile, Chris Bubich takes the loss for Kansas City.
And we were all perfectly adult about his name.
Very mature about Chris Bubich's name.
Yep, totally. Absolutely.
So when you say his name, Cam, do you hear Boo Bitch, or do you hear Boob Itch?
So I hear Boob Itch, but
Boob Itch.
I had someone reply to me on Twitter during this stand, and their reply said, "Boob Itch, get out the way." And I was like, "I got it. That works.
That works so well.
That works." Like, I almost threw my phone across the room whenever I saw that.
Took the first two from Kansas City, come back for the Sunday game, win 5-4. Nick Anderson gets the win in relief. AJ Minter gets the save for his third of the year. Braves get their second series sweep in a row before heading to San Diego.
This was the Sean Murphy series.
This was the Sean Murphy series.
They were ready for him to leave.
Isn't every series the Sean Murphy series this season?
Look now, it is just Sean Murphy's world, and we're just living in it.
And happy to do so.
Yes.
So big series coming up against San Diego. We get there Monday the 17th. Max Fried takes the hill for the Braves and shuts down the Padres, not allowing a run. Braves win 2-0. Minter gets his fourth save of the year. Braves get a little bit of revenge for that lost series in Atlanta a couple weeks earlier. Come back on Tuesday for the second game of the series with Spencer Strider on the hill, and Strider matches Freed's effort, allowing only one run and holding the Padres' offense in check. Meanwhile, the Bats did what they were supposed to do against Blake Snell. Braves win 8-1. And win the series in San Diego. Come back on Wednesday the 19th. Unfortunately, it was getaway day and the boys played like it. Lost a 1-0 game, but still ended up winning the series against the Padres, a team that you're very, very happy to take wins from.
Yeah, a tremendous series, probably the best series to that point of the year against a almost completely healthy Padre team. Especially the 8-1 win where the offense just came alive and dominated. You had to feel really good about that series, especially compared to the last time we saw the Padres. And it was at this point where I started thinking, we are a very good baseball team. And then we went home.
And then we went home for a 2021 World Series rematch series against the Houston Astros. And you know, this series didn't go very well. This series didn't go well. The Braves took 3 L's against Houston. And it's unfortunate because, you know, this, you want to go out against a team like Houston, the reigning champs, the best team in baseball, all things considered, and have a good showing. Unfortunately, the Braves just weren't able to do that. The silver lining for the Braves right now, I guess, is that they are taking care of business against the teams they're supposed to take care of business against. And as long as you can keep doing that, you're going to keep buying yourself time to figure out ways to beat these big dogs like the Houston Astros.
Oh, absolutely. The Houston series, as frustrating as it was, this was a series that it felt like we were in each and every single one of these games. And it kind of felt like maybe the early extra use of the bullpen kind of caught up here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it happens. You don't really feel bad about losing a series to the Astros early in the season. I don't think there's any reason to, especially when you're winning all these series against everybody else. But yeah, it was unfortunate, especially after the Braves had gone 8-1 in their last nine leading up to that series.
Right.
But the good news is that you come out of that series and you have a four-game set at home against the Miami Marlins with Spencer Strider on the mound for the first game. And boy, did Spencer Strider have himself a game. That man took a no-hitter into, was it the seventh?
So he took a perfect game into the seventh, and then a perfect game into the sixth, no hitter into the seventh.
But yeah, he was on fire, just doing Spencer Strider things, and the bats came alive. It was an 11-0 win, exactly what you'd expect from the Braves against Miami. Come back the next night with Charlie Morton on the hill. Braves take this one as well, 7-4. Charlie Morton moves to 3-2 on the season, and the Braves are rolling again with back-to-back wins after getting swept by the Astros. The Wednesday game was probably the best game of the series. Braves were down 4-0 going into that ninth inning and mounted a massive rally to come back and win.
Well,
into the eighth, and mounted a massive rally to come back and win that game 6-4.
Yeah, we finally got to Alcantara to get him out of the game, and then they took advantage of what has been actually a good bullpen to this point this season in Miami. Just a good comeback win that we hadn't really seen yet this year, but was good to see.
Yeah, and I'm not going to talk a ton about the Thursday day game against the Mets, the fourth game of the series. The Braves lost that one 5-4. Another tough getaway game loss, but you win the series 3-1, and you're not going to feel bad about that because you're heading up to New York for your first series against the second place New York Mets. So we get the Friday game with Max Fried on the hill. Max Fried shuts them down for five innings, and five innings was all they ended up playing due to rain. Braves win 4-0 thanks to Matt Olson hitting an absolute piss missile to put the Braves up.
Like 460 feet, just demolished the ball.
It was one of the coolest like pimp jobs too, because he laid the bat down and then kind of stood there for a second and looked at it.
Yep. Admired his work.
And that is the only game we have to talk about from the New York Mets series, because the Saturday and the Sunday games were both postponed due to weather. So tomorrow, as you're listening to this, Monday, May 1st, there will be a doubleheader against the Mets with Spencer Strider taking the hill for the first game. After that, I don't know the announced pitchers because they don't have it on ESPN, unfortunately. But you've got two games against the Mets tomorrow. Really hope to take at least one of those and win the series in New York. You'd feel pretty good about yourselves going from there to Miami before Baltimore comes to town, which will be a fun series to watch. As you know, if you listened to this show last season, the Baltimore Orioles are a favorite of this podcast.
Hey, quick note, game two against the Mets will be Charlie Morton versus Tyler Meagle.
All right, Charlie Morton against Meagle.
Yeah, so a couple games against the Mets, three against Miami, three against Baltimore. Again, doesn't get much easier from here, but this week is comparatively a little easier than next week's going to be. So.
And the month of May is going to be a fun month for us because this is the month where we first really start to feel like we're getting that competitive balance schedule that they put into place this year. Yeah. We've got, but after we play New York and Miami, we've got Baltimore, Boston, Toronto, Texas, and Seattle all consecutively. And these are teams like we don't normally play these teams. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
And where can fans hear all about these series, Alex? Right here on the Chatting Average Podcast.
Right here on the Chatting Average
Bang, bang!
They can hear all about it right here on the Chatting Average Podcast. That's going to do it for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen. For Mr. Cam Matthews, my name is Alex. We will see y'all next week for another brand new episode of the Chatting Average Podcast right here on the Fans First Sports Network.
Bye! We'll be right back.
has been the Chatting Average Podcast. Be sure to check out our merchandise store at teespring.com/stores/Chatting Average Podcast. And please consider becoming a patron of our show at patreon.com/Chatting Average. We'll see you next week for another brand new episode.